Just over 2 weeks ago, EA and BioWare released Mass Effect 3 to almost universal critical acclaim. However, in the ensuing days and weeks, a rising tide of fan outrage has gathered strength. The problem: Mass Effect 3's ending. More specifically, a certain small but growing vocal minority is insisting that Mass Effect 3's ending is a violation of trust between BioWare and their fanbase, and that their choices aren't properly reflected in Mass Effect 3's conclusion. As the noise levels about this issue rose over the weekend and earlier this week, I decided to sit down with some of the most respected critical voices in the games press to talk about Mass Effect 3, about the ending, about the narrative, and about the fan reaction to BioWare's conclusion. This conversation was recorded on March 20th, just days before EA and BioWare announced that in April, they'd be talking more with fans about how they plan to add further exposition, clarity, and possibly even changes to Mass Effect 3's ending. So, hey guys. Hi everybody. Hi Adam.
Hi.
Hi Kim.
Hey.
Hi Francesca.
Hi.
I'm Arthur Geese, reviews editor of Vox Games. With me, as I mentioned, is Adam Sessler, host of X-Play.
Hey.
Kevin Van Ord, senior editor at GameSpot.
Hey there.
And Francesca Reyes, editor-in-chief of OXM.
Hi.
So we're here to talk about the Mass Effects, specifically the Mass Effect 3s. I guess we could start with the ending. Just as a quick warning, this is all spoilers all the time. So anything in this is totally, like, for people who have finished the game. We are going to spoil many, many things, not just the ending, including some Renegade and Paragon stuff throughout the game, because I think that that's important to how the story unfolds and the idea of ownership of the Mass Effect fiction. So I guess I'll start off with the ending. Is there anybody at the table who didn't like the ending in particular?
Apparently not.
A lot of shaking of heads.
But I think the one thing, and you said the same thing, Kevin, is that I didn't realize that the ending was not to be liked. I mean, it's just, I so got caught up in it and enjoyed it that it didn't even sort of dawn on me. I think the only thing that I thought at the ending, and this is, I think, more me than even their game design, is I was so wrapped up in what was about to happen, I didn't fully understand that I had three choices in front of me, and I just walked into the light. So, and then I did that and realized, I think there was actually some opportunity, you know, there was some other choices there, and went back.
I had the same thing. Like, when they show you the flashback at the end, you're like, hey, here's Anderson shooting his pipe, and here's what's-his-face grabbing onto the pipe. When you finally had control of your character, I was like, I just walked straight to a pipe. I was like, I don't even know which one this is.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick it, you know. But, yeah, I mean, I do hate myself because at the end of it, I hate myself for wanting a happy ending. You know, like, I almost had, like, oh, it's not a happy ending, and it was very very sad. It broke my heart, but
to have, I mean, it was Liara satisfying to have my little blue babies.
I
wanted Liara to have my little blue space babies.
I mean, I think, and I talked about this in my review, that this sense of death and finality pretty much was pervasive through this game, and it was the sense that that was going to happen. But yeah, I just wanted, yeah, I liked this world, these characters, my Shepard so much that it was very hard to say goodbye.
Well, there's so much sacrifice in the game. It's hard to imagine anybody going into the final moments thinking that sacrifice wasn't a possibility or even almost inevitable.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, like, one of the things I mentioned in my review, like, sort of the basis around most of my review is the fact that there's that memorial wall in the Normandy, which has the names of everyone who's ever died in any of your games, which includes Caden or Ashley, which includes anyone who might have died in the suicide mission. And knowing, like, after Morden was the moment where you're like, oh, like, they're just not fucking around anymore.
Yeah.
They are going to take things away from me in a way that they're not telegraphing.
Your Morden died.
My Morden died.
Mine did not.
Really?
Oh,
really?
Yes.
I had no idea.
You did the middle ground, didn't you?
No, I didn't do...
You did the middle ground where you chased him away, like you ran away, right?
No, I mean, I went ahead and let the, I faked the curing of the genophage, but I think it was through using one of my renegade options.
Fuck.
I was able to get him.
Really?
Oh, and, you know, but it's just, the reason I'm responding like this is, I had that same thing, is that, I mean, I think it's the brilliance of this game, is that these people aren't real, But I felt so invested that it was almost like I was anxious that somehow I would be reported if I let my Morden die, that, you know, some sort of larger body would come to me and shame me. I see what you're saying.
So this is indicative of something else that keeps happening as I'm talking about this game with other people, is that things that I assumed are just going to happen are not happening for everyone.
I thought that was inevitable. I had no idea that there was...
You were the first person I've talked to that Morden didn't die for.
Morden didn't die. I played the game still pretty heavy Renegade. It was a while before I fully appreciated it. It was a lot more nuanced with the way the reputation plays into it. And then once I'd gone down that path, I was like, I still want to see what happens. And I think... Because with Caden as well, I kept on using my Renegade options, and I didn't end up shooting him, thinking that, oh my god, I'm probably going to end up shooting him.
Okay, so the particularly surprising thing about this to me is the fact that there are Renegade options in the Morden section of Tuchanka where stuff just spirals totally out of control, to the point where you might be the one who kills Morden.
Yeah.
Like, you can shoot Morden in the back.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because you try to stop him from carrying the genophage and he refuses to let you, and a renegade prompt appears on the screen and you kill Morden.
See, it's funny. I think I was also too wondering how diverse is this, and I think it's a testament to what I really have admired about the writing team on this game, is that the clarity of their writing is such, and the way it all seems to integrate, that I thought there was far less diversity than what I'm now learning and talking to you guys.
Playing through it, I could not imagine them writing the game any other way than my choices.
Yeah.
And I know that that's not the case, because, like, I didn't have anybody die on my suicide mission, and I saved Chakwas and Kelly and most of my crew, and I did all these other things, but clearly that's not the case. Like, I know a lot of people where Jack died, or Miranda died, or everybody died. Yeah.
At the time that I was playing through it, there was another guy on one of the other publications in the building who was playing through it, and he was actually using his cannon save. I wasn't. And he only had 3 people survive his suicide mission.
I think that's the lowest you can get.
No, you can have nobody.
You can have no one?
Yeah, and he was the one who Morden ran away, or like he chased him away and faked the death page, and that's how I knew that Morden could live.
Yeah.
Except because in mine, he went up and committed
suicide. Yeah, Morden fakes his death.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get that email later, like, dude, okay. Actually, there's a couple moments where you kind of...
I didn't get an email.
I always wondered if, at that moment, like, if you got both war assets for the Krogan and the Salarian world, because you were able to fake out the Krogans to think that you cured them.
I don't recall, that was one of the few things I noticed in the game, is that when you finished up large chunks, you didn't get kind of the pop-up of what you picked up for war assets all the time.
They're always in there, like, their mark is new, and they update, but...
But, I mean, I think, once again, there was a point in that game where, like, I was like, I know I'm going to get all the war assets I need, and I just want to keep playing. Is there anyone I can help keep alive?
And there was a moment earlier when I went to the... this was in the Tuchanka arc, where I went to the planet with Arachni and Grunt, where I thought, okay, this is where they're going to kill him, because it makes you make the choice between going back to save Grunt and his squad or saving the Arachni Queen. And I thought that I was making the hard decision to save the Arachni Queen. I'm like, I love you, Grunt. We headbutted and stuff, but this is an important thing. And so when he comes out of the rubble at the end, alive, I'm like, oh, okay. So this isn't going to bum me out all the time.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, toys would be that way, though.
And then they kill Morden.
Yeah.
And then they kill Thane. And Morden is a fast death. Thane is a prolonged death.
Well, you know, if you didn't save Thane, then that Salarian diplomat, or whoever it is, dies.
If Thane didn't survive the suicide mission.
Yeah, he isn't in the ME3 for you.
Okay,
It's, like, very different.
That's crazy. So this is, unfortunately, I think, kind of like the tree falling in the forest question. That, you know, because when you play it, you don't know how much... There's so much that has been affected, but the game's not going, hey, this is because of your decisions that you made earlier.
Not at all.
Does it really... Yeah. I mean, it's funny, and I wonder to what extent this plays into that sense of dissatisfaction that is not the majority of people talk about the end of the game, but I think, you know, a large
There's
chunk
a
of that,
very active
that they don't see that their decisions they have made from the previous 2 games and within 3 somehow culminate in a very unique ending.
But they're being very selective about it, because you're seeing the same people go to YouTube and look at all the different endings so that they can complain about how similar they are, while simultaneously kind of ignoring how very different, you know, all of
the
all
ultimate
of our experiences were from each other.
What, Kevin, what ending did you... What was your decision on the Citadel with the space child, as some people on the internet have taken to calling him?
Well, it kind of reminded me, by the way, of, like, 2001 kind of
right.
thing.
Right, I've heard some comparisons to The Matrix
yes.
as well.
I think 2001's the... I prefer that one.
But I chose Fusion.
Right.
Fusion ending. So, now, I hadn't played any multiplayer at this point because I was working from, a carryover save, and I did pretty much every single thing in the game that I could do. I took the option of basically self-sacrifice, but bringing, organic and mechanical life together and what have you.
And this is the choice that's limited to people who actually, like, have the war assets built up. And I think also, like, I don't know how much it depends on the Quarry and Geth situation, which is another really intense moment for a lot of people.
Yes.
That one really
For
happened.
Me, it was probably the most intense for me. Anyway.
So you picked Unification, which is making all life... synthetic, basically, right. Like synthetic and organic. Francesca, what did you? What
the
was
very,
your call?
The first one I did was Kill Reapers, like where the red pipe or whatever it was.
And was that Kill Reapers or Become in Control of Reapers?
No, it was the Kill Reapers.
Okay,
it was the one to the right where Anderson shooting the pipe, where he shoots the pipe, and I don't know why that pipe was red. You know, because that means that it was a renegade choice, right? And I'm like, is killing the Reapers a renegade choice?
I mean, it's tough. I mean, like I said,
I played through as a paragon.
I accidentally picked synthesis because I just walked towards the light. But I think, you know, there's one thing I wish they didn't do is actually identify them as being consistent, because at that point of the game, and I became very obsessed with this in my review, is it's ultimately pointless. In terms of, we had played the first two games with that kind of, that novelty, like, how is this going to turn out? You know, what, you know, it was a very cool lure. And then within this game, I would have thought that the decisions I was making would feel less important because they didn't have a carryover.
Uh-huh.
But I actually cared about them more because it really was more of an invitation to interject my own personal beliefs, and I still played it pretty renegade until, having then tried to see what the renegade option was, I'm like, I think I would have picked synthesis if I had been more aware of the fact that choices were there, because it really is this kind of statement of, hey, this is now your existential prerogative, and, you know, what do you think is right? I mean, I was mentioning, I think that it's a deeply humanistic franchise, and what they did at the end really is the ultimate statement of what their underlying philosophy is.
Well, and part of the reason I did it, too, and just going back to what you talk about it being such a personal experience, I was still mourning the loss of Tally at this point,
oh,
which
God.
Was my...
You lost
which
Tally?
Was, yes.
You
did you lose Legion?
Oh, so you...
I chose the Geth.
Oh, man, losing Tally is rough.
Once again,
did
I used my renegade choices
Tally?
And I got both.
No, no.
Really?
No, I got...
That's a possibility?
No, I take that back.
I able, like the first time I played through, I killed.
I was like good teacher, like wrapping everybody across the knuckles, saying, "No, you will fucking work together," because I had the Paragon backup to do it.
Yeah, and that's what I was kind of going for that. But then there's that moment where like she takes off her mask and she just falls off the, you know,
she takes her
falls
mask
off the cliff. Yeah, you don't see her face.
Oh,
of course.
So when I got to the end, you know, I almost felt like if I don't choose synthesis, then I've ultimately lost Tally for nothing. You know, I felt like, you know what I'm saying?
So for me, I picked the option I chose is to integrate Shepard with the Reapers in the Citadel to take control of them. So everybody else lives and I die. I didn't realize that was going to fucking wipe out every mass relay in the fucking universe.
I think you do
all
three choices.
All three choices, which I kind of like because, as I was telling somebody else, they just totally fucked that universe up by the end. Like, it is completely different, no matter what choice you pick. And two of the choices fuck it up in a pretty similar way, like there might be one race that's extinct. But that third choice, the unification choice, like, every relay is gone and everything is synthetic. And that's a really bold choice.
Well, you know, and it was funny, too, because, like, I mean, a lot of people complain about the final ship landing and how similar the very last moments are to each other. But, like, when I got to the end, what I see is I see Edie and Joker coming out of the Normandy.
Yeah.
And I really, really liked that.
I really liked it, too.
Because I believed in this weird romance.
It was, and it
all
was
through the game.
Directly contradictory to what the Citadel was saying, that synthetics will destroy all organics, etc., etc. But I picked that option because I had finally told Liara I love you. Like, I had made that, like, relationship, like, Shepard's relationship. And so, like, the idea, it was sort of insinuated that she might be knocked up from that.
Right.
And the idea of letting Shepard's little babies be turned into synthetics wasn't okay with me. I wanted my legacy to continue.
And ultimately, though, that's where I felt the satisfaction from. And I know there's another contingent that really wanted to see kind of the Star Wars ending, the massive battle, that sense of visceral satisfaction. And I think BioWare was damned any way they were going to do it. People, you know, they're ending something that people have invested 150 hours in, and, you know, more than just their attention, they have, you know, it is, you know, with that level of engagement and making choices. And I think to go with a quieter, more philosophical take was probably going to alienate a lot of people, but I think it actually showed a very bold move and a very committed move to the integrity of their product.
And it carried on, like, the theme of sacrifice is pretty recurrent through the games. Like,
yeah,
I mean, the first game starts with the Spectre dying. Like, you make the choice on who has to die. You have to make a decision on who to sacrifice at the end of Mass Effect, like whether or not it's most of your fleet, which is reflected in fucking Mass Effect 3. Thanks, guys.
I took out the council.
Oh, man. Like, in the war readiness thing, it's just like, this fleet has been decimated. It hasn't had time
to recover. I saw that too.
And it's like, oh, awesome. Whether you, like, save the council or take no position and basically fuck everything, like, there's that sacrifice in the suicide mission. There's that possible sacrifice. But I wonder if it's spoiled somewhat by the idea that players, or a certain subset of players, will try to game the system no matter what. Where they're like the characters in a Final Destination movie trying to figure out Death's plan and outsmart it. And I wonder if that affects people's enjoyment of the ending in this, because they were trying to figure out the whole time how they could get the best ending. Like, because I hear a lot of talk about the best ending.
Yeah, once again, it kind of, that term doesn't really stand up against the moral structure that has been established in all of these games, that there really is no right or wrong. It's more or less, you're going to make some decisions, and you need to be able to stand by those decisions without knowing exactly how they're going to pan out.
Right, and I mean, as I think everyone here is obviously pretty big fans of the narrative and the story, like, how did you feel that the end fit into the rest of the series? Like, I've heard a lot of accusations of plot holes, in particular. I don't believe that that's true.
I don't know. Like, I've seen, I've read all the analyses of, like, the
good for
holes.
You.
it's frustrating and it's strange, but I needed to know what people thought of it, you know, because, you know, finishing it, like everyone here probably finished it pretty early before.
Yeah.
So you just want to read everything that's possible. Things about plot, it's like, I think that's like the last bastion for people trying to find something wrong with the ending, you know. I just accepted it, you know, but then again, I'm not a big sci-fi person, so I'm not used to, like, sitting there poring over all the little details and finding the consistencies and inconsistencies and in these.
I don't see the game as sci-fi, just the same way that Star Wars really isn't sci-fi. It's fantasy with the trappings of science around it. You know, when I think of sci-fi, I do think of Isaac Asimov. Now, granted, I think it is similar to sci-fi in that you have a great, you know, you're taking contemporary issues and problems and you're extrapolating them to a safer place to discuss them, but it doesn't have that kind of deep thinking into the nuances of a political structure or a scientific structure or something like that.
Well, I mean, politically, it's reasonably complex, particularly for a game, but I see your point. I think the thing that I wonder if people forget is, I kind of wonder how much people actually remember from the first Mass Effect. Like, if I mean, I know that, like, having lived with gamers for years, like, I watch people play games, and I watch how much they do or don't pay attention to the stories in the games they play, and I do wonder, like, how many people remember the fact that the end, like, Saren's endgame in the first Mass Effect was to go to the Citadel and use it to open up one huge mass relay to bring all the Reapers over in one, like, sharp thing. And also that when Sovereign took over the Citadel, like, all the Keepers went nuts and started killing people, and, like, everything changed. So I think in that way, like, a lot of the stuff was foreshadowed before. I wasn't surprised that the Citadel was the key.
Don't
to the Crucible.
I wasn't surprised, because, I mean, it was in the beginning. You know,
and so it seemed like an appropriate place to tie everything up.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, there was that moment like, are they going to end this in London? Didn't that happen to Resistance?
It makes sense. It's like a perfect narrative conceit in that it ends up there. And it's also like the symbol of where all the races have kind of joined up. It's different.
Well, one of the things that people, I do remember reading is that somehow, you know, why was this predestined if the same thing was about to happen in Mass Effect 1? Whereas I think the purpose of everything that happened in Mass Effect 1 was to create the awareness of the Reapers, mm-hmm. which then set everything in motion. You know, because everything is supposed to be functionally inevitable. In what's supposed to be happening in this game, and you know, they first had to know about something so that then they could have all their problems to become weakened so the Reapers could come in and exploit the fact that they could not unify against one enemy.
Right.
I think I know from reading so much about like all the fan outrage and everything.
I think you probably read more specifics about fan outrage than anyone at this table.
I don't know why. It's a sickness, but like everyone had a problem with the space kit. Like
yes,
everyone
said it's a literal Deus Ex
Machina. Yeah.
No, it's a literal god in the machine, Deus Ex Machina. I actually wondered if it was also a ghost in the machine. I think they're actually playing with something because, you know, yes, there's a sense of godliness, but there's a sense of ghostliness because this is a child that you saw die at the beginning of everything.
And it's sort of like, as someone who reads a lot of fiction and who read a lot about fiction in college, like, it seemed like a pretty consistent thematic thing that you're haunted by this ghost that's representative of, like, the people you can't save and the things you can't change.
Like your family,
and then
basically.
At the ending, like, it's in your face is this thing you can't change. And just from a literary perspective, I think that that's slick. Like, it's well executed.
But I think it's also, it's not as precise as I think people read it as, is that at this point, it could be hallucinatory. The whole thing kind of plays out in such a manner. I'm not saying that they are that one is right or the other.
I know you are.
I like
totally,
the instability.
It's totally
this.
Possible they could be. If that's what it turns out to be, I don't know that I will.
I don't think that there's an exact reading on it. I think that they, you know, in a literary fashion, have left it somewhat open. You know, that you as the player are investing yourself into this. Take it as, you know, as what you want, except don't take it as something you're fighting against, because you're really not going to be satisfied.
I liked the space kid thing just because of what it represented and the choices that it made you make. And one of the other, like, the huge complaint, like, probably the main complaint that I see is that your choices mean nothing.
I gotta disagree with that one.
Yeah, I do too.
I do too.
But that's sort of like the big complaining elephant in the room, is that there's this group of people that are saying all the decisions I made across three games mean nothing. And I kind of wonder,
I mean, are you supposed to get a prize? I mean, I don't want to mock too much, and like, I know that some people have lauded me for actually not mocking, but as this thing has gone on, I've become increasingly frustrated that the game doesn't owe you anything. And it's actually something you're supposed to get out of it yourself. That, you know, I mean, I do wonder if culturally, we really are in such a state of a sense of reward for accomplishing or doing anything that just kind of the pleasure of the art is not satisfactory. Or that, you know, because gamer scores seem to count that much, that somebody wanted something so unique that could identify them as to how they played the game, and just the general satisfaction of playing an exceptional game series isn't enough. And that's a little bit just, well, worrisome to me, I gotta say.
Yeah, and I think that it's the question that everybody's asking at every panel that has any industry person in it right now. I think Ken Levine was at a talk for the Smithsonian. Where he, like, the takeaway is basically that the conversation makes him sad, or at least I think that was our headline on it.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And I think most people in the games press are with him on that.
Yeah.
That there's a sense of authorship that belongs with the people who are actually making the game. And just from a practical perspective, first off, Mass Effect, to me, has been less about me determining the story and more about me sort of nudging the story, like, through degrees. Because there's never a moment where you're making, or there are very few moments where you're making vastly different choices. It's more choosing how you react to the situation at hand.
It's investment. It's yeah. not, yeah.
I just think people forget that someone wrote the choices that you're making. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not free will
now,
in that way. Like,
now,
totally.
To be fair, I do think that this whole thing would not be happening at the end of many trilogies.
It clearly didn't happen.
And this is a testament to the effectiveness of what BioWare accomplished with this game. I mean, that it's just kind of, you know, I think they unwittingly dug their own grave. They have people so passionate about this that this was inevitable, no matter what they did with the ending.
I think it's also the fact that this is probably the first any kind of series that let you carry over save and your character throughout all of them.
Yeah, it's wildly ambitious. Yeah. Like, just to take a step back and look at what it is, which is, like, I think that they said there were something like 1,000 variables in Mass Effect 3.
Crazy
and
algorithm.
Just the idea of coding around that.
And writing to it.
Yeah, and as a writer, like, the idea of, like, the world's most ambitious choose-your-own-adventure book is really incredible to me.
I think this is why they do it in Edmonton. Because half of the year, you have nothing else to do in Edmonton. You might as well write to these variables.
It's too dark and it's too cold. All right. Time for variable number 673.
Well, here's something. I mean, you brought up Dragon Age a few moments ago. And here's something interesting. Because at the end of Dragon Age 2, I felt very strongly that I did feel like nothing I did in that game mattered when the end of that game came to the end. Because it did feel like there were events so inevitable that my existence there mattered nothing at all. But I think that's a topic for another day. But what's interesting, though, is to compare it to Mass Effect 3, where you can initially start drawing some of the same comparisons, but I feel it's actually very different because, you know, the ripples of what you felt are you know, of what happens in the galaxy are still felt because of your presence in it, you know, from the narrative perspective. And number two, it's not a little fantasy place. This is the freaking galaxy. I mean, ultimately, isn't it telling you that
the universe, even.
Right. I mean, your presence was enough to change, you know, galactic history, in a sense. I mean, the...
No, no, like, in a very, like, recognizable way. Because, like I said, like, once that game is done, like, the universe is just completely fucked. Like, just to recap, assuming that you got the Solarians and the Krogan... cool, and the Garrus's race, the Turians and the Krogan cool, and you got the Quarians and the Geth cool, which is not an easy thing to do. Like, all of their fleets are over Earth. There are no Mass Effect relays left. Like, but that's assuming that everything went perfectly, and it's, the more I talk to people, the more I hear, like, things didn't go perfectly. Like, Kevin Talley died for you because you picked the Geth over the Quarians, which is totally understandable because that game makes Quarians look like a bunch of assholes. And like, the Genophage may or may not be cured, and that's like the future of a species.
And it's a tough decision. That was a 20-minute standing on my balcony going like, and like, I mean, that's where I kept tripping myself out. I'm like, but you know, why am I getting this caught up? I really was that caught up in it.
Do you think people wanted a Fallout 3 style, like,
I've seen some
kind
people
of
say
combine
it.
This into,
but that wasn't
I
satisfying.
Need to know an epilogue for everything that happens? I've never been particularly enamored with a Fallout ending. I don't, you know.
I like the Fallout.
I like
Fallout.
It's
it
fine.
Work for Mass Effect,
it's fine, but, like, I don't know. Like, it's because I'm not personally invested in anything that really happens in Fallout. Like, I like.
I mean, you're basically faceless in Fallout 3.
But I like that, like, it's like the end of American Graffiti, which is the first instance where you suddenly got, you know, that little line of text about what happened to them later in life. You know, as if these people actually existed, and somehow the narrative somehow exists in some sort of meta universe out there.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's strange, but yes, I think that's what a large portion. I mean, I think there's no consistency in what people want.
I'm not a big fan of the epilogue. It sort of reminds me. My favorite novel is The World According to Garp by John Irving, and it ends in a very similar way, where it has to have an entire chapter where everybody that was in the book, their fate has to be revealed. Where I just wish it would just end it. I mean, the same way about the ending of Harry Potter.
Well, Dickens,
I wish it would have just ended.
Half of Dickens' novels. It's like the last chapter of Oliver Twist is one of the most frustrating things. Here's this incredible piece of work that ends on, you know, could have ended on this really thoughtful note. And it's like, turns out you're actually related to all these people. You're rich now, little Oliver. Have fun.
And narratively, ending where it did ends it on hope, which is something that there's not a lot of in that game. Like, that game is a major fucking bummer.
Yeah.
For about 25 of 30 hours of playing it. I got teary-eyed at least a couple times.
I did. Yeah.
And I don't think I could ever say that about a game.
Yeah, I didn't cry.
Well, I've cried twice this year already.
I'll just say it now.
Like more emotionally affected than I think I've been watching a movie in longer than I can remember. Yeah. Like, watching Thane die and, like, that whole prayer sequence with this, like, his son being there, like, his son who could be dead. Like, yep. There are people who don't know what happened to Miranda.
Yeah.
And I guess it just didn't occur to me. Like, that there are some of...
What happened to Miranda?
I know what happened to Miranda. I saw it happen right in front of me. She got killed.
No, right, you can live.
She can live.
She just... Well, in my thing, she just...
That was my woman!
I went with her with her sister stuff, and we infiltrated the... Like, the labs and stuff, and then she's like, thanks for your help, bye.
Right, but that's...
But I had stopped with her. She was the relationship that's the I maintained. I screwed up on every single other one. She was the one I maintained, and they shot her.
Okay, so yeah, she didn't... She survived for me, and also, I think almost in, like, the sort of nod of the head to people that want that, like, there is that moment before you start the last section of the game where you can talk to everyone who's still alive.
Yeah, you can.
Yes, which
all
is
there.
So affecting. I mean, I was like, wow.
It's
okay.
Like, I'm saying goodbye to all these people. Yeah. Like, and that's, I think, it sort of occurred to me, like, about halfway through that I'm like, so Shepard has to die, like, in this, right? Like, that's how this works. Like, the message of this game is that heroes are heroes because they die.
Well, I think the message is also, I don't want to sound too grim, you're going to die.
Yes.
Think about the legacy that you leave behind you through your actions.
Well,
and that's why there not being some, you know, diverse set of endings, I think, is quite important. It's that final decision is pointless except for you.
And there's even the idea that there's stuff out there that's even bigger than what you imagine. I mean, all this time we've been set up to think that the Reapers are pretty much the be-all, end-all of what the galaxy is going to come to, right?
Right.
And it's just this, and suddenly we find out there's something even greater than that, and some people are calling it, you know, the Deus Ex Machina. I just think of it as, like, an indication that there's something even far greater, whether it be, you know, the 2001 Space Baby or the ending of Contact or whatever.
The 2001 analogy is no one knows what happened at the end of 2001. Everyone knows what happened at the end of Mass Effect.
Right. Which is, you die.
Right.
Sort of, unless you get that other end.
You know, but the point being that there's, you know, that there are layers. You know, we think, okay, here's the Reaper layer, and this is kind of like, you know, inevitable here. But then actually there's a layer beyond that where there's so much more that we don't even know at work and at play. And that's...
Well, also, I got, you know, it really didn't hit me until the beginning of 3 what the Reapers really look like, and I'm going to probably pronounce it wrong, but cephalopods, like squids.
Yeah.
But they remind me more of the prehistoric ones there, and you used to read all those Time Life books as a kid, that they really look like nascent, very early evolved life. And yet, but they're mechanical, and they're kind of bringing everything to a reset.
Are you implying that there were intelligent squid on Earth? The established civilization.
No, I'm definitely not saying that.
That would be awesome.
Well, you saw the
Abyss, I'm
going to
go do that fan
fiction
that's right now.
True. The Abyss taught us that there are actually sentient jellyfish on
the The Abyss taught me that I am never going to get Aliens 3 like I want to.
Also, Michael Biehn is a dick.
That's what we've learned.
I think that, like, the ending to that game is just knowing, like, that the universe is different. And also, if you take a step back, I'm fucking amazed that they got permission to end the game that way.
Yeah.
Because they basically, first of all, they annihilated that character. Second of all, how do you do, like, another Mass Effect game that takes place after this?
Well, the Buzz Aldrin thing at the very, very end.
Right, but
after
that's
the,
like,
credits.
That's like DLC. It's like, oh, well, this actually happened back before Shepard went to the Citadel and all this other shit went wrong. Like, that seems like that's their
conceit. Well, the way they're trying to say it is that there are multiple stories. It starts to acknowledge the fact that things can happen differently. And almost like, you can do it over. Almost like that kind of, maybe you can set things right to a more satisfying way, you know, with yourself, not
unless
with
you
the
decide
ending.
To go on YouTube and spoil every ending for yourself. In which case, like,
that is actually one of the toughest things. I think probably the act of ultimate cruelty on EA's part was to put this game out right when GDC was happening. And one of the reasons why I wanted to review this game is, you know, I didn't want that delay of time where the internet could, you know,
ruin it for you.
Because I mean, I've been wanting to have this discussion, but I can't have it with any of my coworkers because they haven't finished it yet.
Yeah, it's and not only that, but everyone is terrified. of you talking about it. It's like, no, you don't get to say anything, like not even thinly veiled references.
And this isn't like the crying game, like don't give away that she has a penis.
Right.
This is like, no, I don't want to know anything about, you know, the 30 to 50 hours that you can invest in this game.
Yeah.
Well, it's because we care about every single moment.
Yeah.
You know, we're wrapped up
in there's so many moments.
I guess, you know, and that's it. There's so many conclusions that the game offers that the idea that you're not getting the narratively satisfying one.
There's so many, like, little side narratives that happen. Like, for example, thing that didn't happen with Kevin is I caught Garrus and Tally making out.
Yeah.
Oh, I did too.
Yeah, I did too.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, near the gun battery. And it was totally non-telegraphed. Like, I was doing the rounds of the Normandy to talk to everybody, as you do. And I walked up to the gun battery and opened the door, and Tally and Garrus are there, and they just separate really quick. And
yeah,
exactly.
Well, you know,
and we was just doing this. Oh no, we weren't doing anything.
And then they start, they admit to it, and they're like, and Tally starts like making lewd jokes to Garrus, like, "I'm only using you for your body, Garrus." Like, if we survive this, it's over. I'm like,
oh my god.
Okay. Yes, I will take that.
Well, you know, it's really weird. We were talking about the romances too at some point over Twitter, and I had, like, in Mass Effect 2, Tally was my romance, and she's absolutely my favorite character in the Mass Effect universe. So
I'm so pissed I still didn't see her face.
Yeah.
Like, there are two things about the Mass Effect series that I feel no closure
on.
You see
her face, though. You see her if you romance her, right?
No.
No, you don't.
Not unless it happens in Mass Effect 3 and nobody's told me.
No, in Mass Effect 3. You see her face if you romance Tally.
Really? Because I romance her in 2. And
that's what I heard. They have pictures of it and all this crap.
The only thing I got in Mass Effect 2 was as soon as the sex scene started, like, an achievement unlocked thing came across the bottom and then it comes black.
You know, I wish you could turn off achievements in this game, because, once again, it was just one of those that just kind of pushed me outside of it.
It's not the achievements.
I guess I forget to do that. I always forget I can do that.
It's the strategic notifications kind of pull you out.
Yeah.
It's like, Thane is dead, but you got this stuff.
Yeah.
Genophage is cured, Morden's gone, here's some stuff.
So,
I mean, romance, you were saying.
No, it's just, we were talking about that. And so in 3, I ultimately romanced Lyra, which happened almost by accident. I mean, I'm talking to her on the Citadel.
You can almost stumble into some stuff.
And then she's like sidling up to me, and I'm trying to be really nice. She's like, oh yeah, we're totally going out now. So, but eventually, like, we're talking.
You flirt like crazy with Lyra in that game.
Yeah. Well, you've seen her. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But we go, you know, so ultimately Tally comes on board. And it's interesting here, because then she acknowledges now that she was my lover in Mass Effect 2, but no longer in Mass Effect 3. And she actually talks with me about it, and we discuss, you know, how she understands, you know, that so much time has passed and Lyra's her friend.
It's 6 months! 6 months between the end of Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3.
Well, so much has happened, Arthur.
Six months!
But, it's really great, though, because people that aren't in that circumstance, I mean, how many people are going to romance Tally in 2 and then romance Lyra in 3?
I did the first time that I played Mass Effect 2 for review. Then I lost my save and played through Mass Effect 2 again, and this time, knowing that the Shadow Broker DLC existed, played through without romancing anybody and just, like, sort of planted the seeds with Lyra. No pun
intended. This is so crazy what we're talking about.
Although I'm going to have to take my leave, I think, just because there's so much going on that I have to take care of in the next 45 minutes.
You're a busy man.
But I hope you don't mind. I'm going to say goodbye to everybody that's listening or whatever.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks,
man. Take care.
Sorry to be in the lurch.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you all as well.
So
I did think the romances in 3 were way better than in 1 and 2.
Really?
Because they felt like relationships way more than 1 or 2.
I think love in the time of the apocalypse just carries a little more dramatic weight.
Maybe that's it, but I don't know. I just felt like it was spaced out a lot better. It wasn't just like the booty call was the end all be all. It wasn't
self-aware. No, you're right. I mean, not that it was ever like God of War.
It wasn't like the end reward that it was in 1 and 2, where you're just like, really?
Well, and I mean, I guess one of the things, too, the sort of the humanism of the game is how openly, you know, how it had openly gay characters. Mm-hmm. And that, like, really, this game said, if you would like to have a facsimile of who you are, the tools were in this game to be able to
much more so
that.
Than
and I found it very, very admirable on their part.
I almost ended up going on a date with Cortez by accident. Like,
to
I was
dance club.
Yeah, like, eventually it was starting to get to the where I'm like, these dialogue choices seem kind of flirty. And then he said, you should come meet me at the club. And I'm like, I'm good. You have fun. And I mean, moments like the Tally Garris, like, romance thing. Oh, holy hell. Like, it's funny, but there's still that sort of undercurrent of poignancy in the fact that, like, no, these people could totally be dead. Which brings me to my other sort of point of contention, which is that my final crew, like, my squad going into the teleporter thing to the Citadel, was Garrus and Edie. Mm-hmm. And once that rocket hit and we were all just, like, blown all to hell, like, in the final cinema, you see Edie, but I didn't see Garrus anywhere.
Oh, how many, I had Garrus in mine.
Walked, yeah,
I had Garrus in mine.
Garrus walked out of yours.
Yeah.
Out of your ship at the very end.
Oh, hold on. I did endings twice. If I did the one where I control the Reapers, I believe I saw Garrus.
See,
I think I saw Garrus, Edie, and Joker come out. I might be wrong.
There was no Garrus in my cinema.
It was the same with mine. Like, the control the Reapers was, you know, it's Joker, whoever you romance, and then one other character for the most part.
See, I mean, they paid attention. It's just, it's one of those, I think, only with repeat playings, maybe will some of these nuances become evident.
And the only thing that occurs to me is that as I was about to walk into the light to teleport up, like, I saw a Turian in blue armor, like, laying across the threshold. But stuff was so blurry.
I thought of everything.
That I couldn't tell. I was like, Garrus was—he was my consistency. He was—he basically sort of turned into Shepard's conscience by the end.
I think that team must love that character so much because he had all the best lines. He had.
Like, they love Morden and Edie. Literally a third act character. My God.
Yeah, they really took the Edie character and ran with it.
I mean, someone had a lot of fun with that. The question I wanted to kind of throw at you, because I think we're probably coming to the end, is I do not want to walk down a dangerous path that Jeff Cannata did. But I think one of the issues that when these controversies come up between us and we seem to be out of step with what seems to be every gamer out there, how many people is this? And I guess I started to wonder also if this thing became a little bit self-propelling. When obviously a very diehard group that finished this game very quickly expressed their sentiment, and that maybe some other people started to get in line. I guess it seems that EA is at least flirting, or BioWare is at least flirting with the idea that somehow they could, you know, rectify this in DLC, which concerns me greatly.
Yeah.
But is there really that large an audience? There is a loud audience, that is without dispute. But how large is it? I don't even think this audience can account for that.
I mean, it's difficult for me to say because, like, I wonder different things about the people that actively dislike it. Like, do they dislike it because it didn't give them the Frodo laying in bed with all the hobbits jumping up and down on it ending? Like, that I think that a lot of people
sort of... With the freeze frame with everyone jumping?
Yeah. and I don't say that to be dismissive. Like, I'm just saying that, like, that's, like, an ending to an epic trilogy in recent memory, which...
Yes.
This is probably
the most successful... I think this is far superior. Can I just say that?
This is the most successful, like, trilogy narratively that I maybe have ever seen.
No, I am in full agreement with you. I cannot think of, outside of maybe John Updike finishing the Rabbit novels, I cannot think of something that...
And I mean, think about the company that, like, you're lumping...
Yeah,
like,
no, and I do that...
Space dinosaurs with shotguns into, like...
I don't know, I think I think people are having a hard time differentiating. And I don't know if there's actually a difference between entertainment and, I hate using this, but art. You know what I mean? Like, it's entertainment as far as, like, it's supposed to make you feel good, you know, escapism, fantasy. I think people have that idea or that definition for what Mass Effect should be. It's a summer blockbuster. You should, at the end, feel like you can pump your fist in the air and go, like, yeah, that...
I mean, so many good summer blockbusters have ended with a death.
No, I know, and that's, like, the thing, but I mean, I think...
Not in recent memory, unless I'm wrong. I've kind of stopped going to see them because I want to keep what little brain I have left.
I mean, I don't know why, but, like, the first thing to sort of come to mind was Gladiator. Like, Gladiator is a movie that was super popular. Everyone loved it.
I think it tried to aspire to more than what it actually was, and so that's why I would make a small exception for that.
Maybe. Did it win the Oscar?
It did.
Yeah.
But not Best Director.
Yeah. No. Yeah, well, Ridley Scott is, like, really short on accolades.
Well, he had just made Hannibal when they were voting, which...
So, I mean, a movie like that, which does end with, like, the main character's death, and doesn't end with an epilogue saying, like, this is what happens to everybody. It's like, this is the potential that his actions made possible, and hopefully they don't fuck it up. I just... I don't know.
I think there's a difference between you playing the character in some ways, because you feel more invested, you feel it's you, and you've made all these choices over the past. So I think, I don't know, I've had this conversation since the game, since everyone played through the game, and there's really, it's impossible to really figure out. I mean, someone
I think amazingly you're right, smart, Francesca. Yeah. I think that this game did ask something of its participant, unlike what most games, and especially any other form of entertainment does, which is so much more passive, I hate using the word because it's become too commonplace, but there is a sense of entitlement that comes from it, that somehow what I've given in needs to somehow come back out.
That's my knee-jerk response. Like, I don't want to write off
I don't either.
Who clearly feel so, like,
wounded.
Engaged and wounded
yeah.
by this perceived slight that they're actively trying to change the ending to something, which I don't think I've ever seen.
No, I haven't either, and I think this is where I went from a more moderate view of what was happening to one that is a little less patient, because
it, that was delicately worded.
Yeah, no, it's because it speaks to a larger cultural something that is very disquieting to me, and it's not necessarily just the entitlement, but groupthink and sort of a mob mentality where I don't even think many of the people who are kind of moving in this direction care anymore about sort of getting this ending and getting the satisfaction because of maybe of the perceived slight that, you know,
I thought about this way too much, but like there's a huge like generational thing that's led up to this, I think, and not you know, the least of which is, you know, or not the least of which is like the fact that you're looking at games as not just entertainment with Mass Effect. There's something more to it.
There's a larger culture around it.
There's a larger culture. It means so much more to people. I mean, yeah, entertainment can do that. Hollywood blockbusters can do that. But at the same time, this is the first game that's kind of...
This is like our reaction to the last Star Wars movies. I mean, that's the only thing I can see comparable. And you know what? I still stand by how much I hated those movies and how I felt betrayed by George Lucas.
Did you petition for a...
No. I realized that maybe I should just put some of these things behind me and move on to other things.
And I mean, like, even him changing the movies, like, is met with sort of eye-rolling.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, these giant petitions. And I guess, like, the idea...
No, be fair. Mass Effect is current. When he made those changes, it had already...
Right.
It was arcana.
And you bring, like, the investment of player choice into it. And I guess you do start to get to the point where people think that, like, I hate using the word owed because it does indicate that sense of entitlement, and I don't think it's fair for me to write that off, like, by calling it entitlement.
In the same way.
Like, my knee jerks to the word entitlement.
I am at lack of a better and more delicate word to use, and that's why I lean to that one, too. And, I cannot help but think of Misery, you know?
Oh, God. I think I saw you make that reference on Twitter. Yeah.
I don't know. I just think that it's not even just this game. I think it's a generational thing where, with marketing and with, like, the way things are going with social media, it's all like, we want your feedback. You know, you matter. Every single person here matters. You want to hear what everyone has to say. You can control your destiny. Vote on this. You can change it. You know, I think that whole culture has kind of led to this feeling that you...
Analogous to Mass Effect, what we've done with community, with our websites, and what game companies have done with their community is analogous to, the creation of the GAF. You know, it's that thing that all seems so sensible at the time.
I'm so mad at you right now.
That, you know, we don't know... There isn't an established dynamic of how this is supposed to work. We've entered something that I think that people on both sides benefit from so much, but we don't have rules of engagement because we're still in the nascent era of how this is all supposed to work out. And we're seeing some, I think, of the very strong stumbling blocks that I think are happening in these relationships.
I remember I was at the Santa Cruz screening for Indie Game, the movie. And they had Team Meat and Phil Fish up there doing the Q&A, and they were talking about Kickstarter and the pros and cons to Kickstarter, and like, is that the future of funding independently developed things, whether it's a movie or whether it's a game? And you know, of course, Phil Fish, being Phil Fish, he got up and he said, I don't know if I could have done Kickstarter because it would make everyone feel like they were a partner in what I was doing.
And I actually sort of understand that, because back when Rebel FM started, like, we accepted donations for like a week and a half, and we got like $13,000. And that's been something that's like haunted us through the last 3 years.
Like soupy sales.
there's this like this
I don't
idea.
Even get that reference, but I love any reference to soupy sales.
There's this idea in certain audiences that they're sort of owed something from us, like doing this thing, and it's really difficult to deal with.
And you there's kind of a point there. I mean it's. You know, the soupy sales thing was him making a joke that he ended up, you know, where he's telling kids to steal money from their parents and send it to him, and he got the money.
Oh, jeez. So, yeah, it's... I just wonder if, like, there's been a lot of talk over the last day about, like, the point of no return or this tipping point that we're approaching. And I worry that that's the case. Like, I worry that people who want to tell complicated stories in games are looking at this and saying, okay, so... What do we need to do to avoid this? Do we not need to tell a story, or do we need to tell a story that has less player input? Like, how do we manage the player expectation with our goals as people that want to tell a story? Because, I mean, I think that the people that are doing the most interesting stuff narratively in games are the people that want to tell a story. Like, mm-hmm. Ken Levine is obviously, like, there's a real auteur sensibility to what he's doing. He clearly has stories he wants to tell and things he wants to say.
Yeah.
And it seems
complicated,
like,
things that he's not going to take a stance on,
right? Or he won't make his stance obvious. And it seems clear to me, or in BioWare, like Casey Hudson specifically has said, like, that they had a pretty good idea of where they wanted the story to go from the beginning. Like, that this is where the story was going. And like, if you go back to Mass Effect's narrative beats, you sort of see some of it. But I mean, like, who is going to take that risk?
I think it's, well, I do think in some aspects it's very specific to this one series, you know, as far as, because of the amount of choice you're able to make and shaping your character, even though, of course, it was all written by somebody, it's not like you can just pick choices out of the air, you know, like,
but
you
it's
had
so
to choose
granular
choices.
That people feel like they are.
Oh, no, I know, but I think it's very specific to this one case in a way, but I do worry that if they were to change the ending,
if they were to make a very important choice, yes. I mean, once again, the Mass Effect analogy floods back onto this thing quite remarkably.
It would discourage a lot of storytelling in games. Like, one person, like a creative vision, like having a creative vision, like of what do you want to say with this game? It's almost like you had a crowdsource shit now, you know, and that kind of defeats the purpose. That's what
I don't think anything could turn me off more to games than that.
Yeah.
And I don't think, I mean, that's like an extreme example.
Like love smothering something, like right as it hits, like its true point of potential. Like, that's what scares me. That's what all of this does. Like, and not just like seeing things like EA and BioWare saying things like, we would love to have a conversation with you guys about the ending. Like, first of all, that scares me as an artist, because it sounds like you guys are bowing to pressure narratively, like, from these, and this is going to sound really dismissive, like, crazy people. But...
Well, no. There's a young kid who follows me on Twitter, who sent me an essay that he wrote, and, you know, saying the same things that we're saying. Wonderful analogy. And I had forgotten all about this. When Ibsen's A Doll's House premiered in the 19th century, late 19th century, it was excoriated because of the way that it positioned a woman at the end of it. And literally, there was that kind of thing, like, this was dangerous. And here's this thing that's now considered to be easily one of the highest points of Western theater, you know, in large part because of what it does in its ending. And that's where I think that there's this real anxiety that, you know, this may not have the same kind of sociological implications of kind of what it meant for, like, regarding women in that play, but it is at the same time, if you give in to the mob, it becomes a slippery slope.
Yeah.
You know, I really hope BioWare and EA stand firm, because this will blow over. It's kind of weird. I think everyone's caught off guard by it. This will blow over.
Like, that's what I wonder if it will. Because until a few weeks ago, we were still hearing bullshit about Dragon Age.
Oh, I know. Yeah,
still.
Yeah. And I mean...
I haven't.
I'm curious. It's just, there's just, like, this regular group of... I mean, like, this, like, Venom directed at BioWare isn't new. Like, this isn't, like, something that just happened. Like, it's been building and building... Basically, since, like, Mass Effect 2 came out.
Mass
like,
Effect 2, yeah.
Like, Dragon Age Origins and Mass Effect 2 were, like, very clear, like, markers of where BioWare was going, where, like, Dragon Age Origins was, like, a love letter to their past, and Mass Effect 2
no, was,
like,
a strongly delayed game that was still indicative of past design philosophy.
Right. But you can't... But people don't understand that, just like people don't want to understand or understand that, like, a DLC character, like, isn't cut out of the game so they can sell it, necessarily. Yeah. Like,
well, think about what Fallout 3 went through with No Mutants Allowed. I mean, this does exist, and it does seem to dissipate. I think, once again, we are not capable of the volume in terms of the noise people make, you know, equating it with what the actual volume of the size of these people really demonstrates. And I do worry that BioWare and EA have been so shocked that they're really thinking that loud equals lots. And I just don't know. I hope it's not the case.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, what did they sell? Like, did they say 3 million?
Almost a million.
They shipped like a million in the first 48 hours. Like, yeah, they sold a million in the first 48 hours.
And I mean...
Which is way better than any Mass Effect has ever seen.
Yeah, and like, the petition was signed, at least at the beginning, by like 20,000 people.
I think what would be nice, I wish people were more focused on what I think is the most important thing coming out of it. I want to see Mass Effect 1 redone more consistent with 2 and 3, and then sold as a packet altogether, because I keep on wanting to play this franchise, but getting into that damn truck.
Like, that is... And I mean, like, and I would love to have that conversation about the baggage that games inherently carry of trying to do stuff like this. Whereas something like the Godfather trilogy, which is another trilogy that...
There's one that
collapsed
terribly.
On itself. Because, it didn't need to be a trilogy. But the point is, it's a trilogy that collapsed on itself. But also, as movies, the first Godfather ages arguably the best out of any of them.
Yeah.
And the first game out of any trilogy... will invariably be the worst.
Yeah.
And like, it is
because I did too. But go back and play it.
It's great, but they hadn't gotten a bad idea for the combat.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, the that Arachnite Queen boss battle will just cause me ulcers.
I mean, I know people that stopped playing the Mass Effect at that part.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
So, I mean, that's a conversation that's worth having, just as talking about the medium and the potential for storytelling and stuff like that, that the sort of built-in obsolescence of games makes it difficult to go back to that stuff.
And that's where I think the art question becomes so much more strange and interesting.
But instead, we're fucking talking about the ending.
Yeah, I know.
And whether or not EA is going to change it.
I know.
And then there are some people who were implying that it's cool because the ending was just a dream. Which is, as far as I know...
Okay, isn't this like these... I've heard there's this group of people that think the anime really exists in an alternate reality. I mean, that's starting to move around to that territory.
Well, there's the indoctrination theory, too, right?
That Shepard is indoctrinated?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is... I mean, that would actually be more disappointing to me than them changing the anime.
I don't have a problem with people saying that. Nor do I actually have a problem with people saying that
I
it's
like
a dream.
Like,
because that's what
theory.
Ambiguous endings are all about. Yeah. It becomes a point of discussion, and it kind of, like, it allows it to linger on, and that's why I don't understand why people, where
and
the various dissatisfaction is should be indicative of how satisfying it is.
As a more recent example, and we probably need to wrap this up, Inception.
Mm-hmm.
Inception is a movie whose ending is very much in question. That is a movie
and
where...
it's supposed to be in question.
And it's... I mean, there have been conflicting reports of people saying, oh, well, this is the ending. But still, no one is really 100% sure what that
ending is. If it had a clear ending, it would have a clear ending. Same with 2001. It's a point of discussion. But the people that came to me after Inception came out and said, it was all a dream. I'm like, how do you know?
And, like, that's... Like, the point of endings like that are to make you ask questions.
Yeah,
like,
yes. It's a point of art.
Expository, super expository endings are the pits. Like,
I think it suits certain things sometimes,
Dallas.
But it does.
It helps Dallas explain some things.
But it doesn't open it up. Like, it doesn't make it memorable.
The only time I ever remember seeing an expository ending that in something I was invested in and thought was well done was Band of Brothers.
We kind of knew the ending.
Exactly. But it talks about what happened to all those people and, like, such and such died in a car accident or...
Well, because they were real.
Because they were real people.
And your investment was the fact that you were kind of... It was a reflection of some incredibly heroic things done by actual human beings. No,
like, but other than that, like, I can't think of an expository ending which I liked. And even something like Lord of the Rings, people bitched. It ended that way, that it was, like, ending after ending after ending. And just... This people were saying the ending is the last 5 minutes of the game. I'm like, you fucking spend 4 hours saying goodbyes.
Yeah.
And sometimes you spend You say you make hard goodbyes to characters in that game.
The way, and I described this in my review, that I think some of the most poignant are those times when people say, let's have a drink. Because, you know, it's like it's that character trying to hold on, like maybe we can make it out of this.
Yeah.
And you just get that sense that everyone is just in denial that this is it. You
know, and like that hope juxtaposed with them fucking murdering your friends, like left and right, especially people from the first game.
Yeah.
And the fact that you may kill some of those people because you think it's what you have to do.
Yeah.
Guy didn't kill
every time
Ashley.
You go on a mission, you're like, oh, yes. Who's going to die? Like, someone's not going to, you know, make
you
it
never really feel that in Mass Effect 2 because it's like, well, this isn't the suicide mission. That's the suicide mission. Like, but if I game the suicide mission just right, I can do this. I
highly encourage that for people. And, you know, and I have the same compulsion sometimes to do that. I think the other reason why I want to have Mass Effect 1 redone is I want to do the playthrough where I want to, like, I don't want to pay any attention to Paragon or Renegade and just see what happens. Play it as my instinct would actually take me.
It's, I mean, generally, it defaults to the negative choice, is my understanding, and I think that that in and of itself is part of, like, the sort of message behind Mass Effect, if there is such a thing, which is that no choice is the same as a bad choice.
Yeah.
Or no choice is the same as the dick move.
Yeah.
Like, which is basically what the Renegade option throughout those games, like, basically, in my head, is, like, the dick move.
Okay. Maybe to close it out, I kind of want to say the one other thing that I wanted satisfaction on, the first one is what does Tally look like?
Yeah.
You know the autograph hound from 1 and 2?
Yes.
Yeah, Conrad Werner?
I had this dream. Just, I kind of want it to happen that Shepard did save the world. That was a dick to Conrad. Shepard saves the world, he's being lauded, and the guy comes and just shoots me in the head. That's
was Werner in your game?
No, I don't know if anyone knew Werner.
Sure
he was
in
totally
game.
In my game.
Oh,
okay,
really?
I
shoot him away
he
in two. So
saved
that's
me
it.
From being shot by somebody.
Really?
I'm trying to remember if I got that on one of them. I don't remember now because.
He saved me from being shot.
I can
Kelly
say,
Chambers was in my game. I
okay,
saved
Kelly
her from
Chambers
being killed by Cerberus.
Really?
Like, you meet her and you can tell her, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you're going by the same name, for God's sake. You should change your name. And either you convince her or you don't. And then Cerberus takes the Citadel, and for me, she lived, and she's saying, they fucking came through here, and they were asking for me.
Well, I think, if anything, this discussion obviously has not resolved the controversy, but I want to go play Mass Effect 3 again.
See, I'm different in that I walked away from Mass Effect 3 feeling clean. Like, I didn't want DLC. I don't like the fact that it opens up with more DLC, though I understand why, especially after stuff like Fallout 3. Like, I get why you can buy DLC, because they want to sell it to you.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that they did it in such a way that, you know, it doesn't shit all over the ending. If they do shit all over the ending, I will be really disappointed.
It's just, for me, it just depends. Like, I mean, we don't know. I mean, all these fans and all these gamers are saying, like, we demand it, but we have no idea what BioWare has planned. Maybe they planned something all along, like some sort of weird, like, these are the adventures of Garrus and Caden or something.
Or Conrad. Maybe
yeah,
get the Conrad.
Or,
no,
hey,
for
here's
it.
Vega. You know, or whatever. You know, we have no idea. They might have this elaborate DLC structure that we don't have any idea. I mean,
I'm more than happy to find out about that. Just, yeah.
Who thought that they missed something when they saw Buzz Aldrin in the credits?
I thought so at first.
I missed a character. Yeah. I missed a mission.
What did you guys think of that weird Star Wars thing?
I liked it. I thought
it was fine. Like it felt referential, like to sort of like the conceits of other sci-fi stories.
If they hadn't had Buzz Aldrin or the reincarnated voice of Carl Sagan, which I did start to think it was for a moment there when he said millions of stars,
I think
it would have been without impact whatsoever. It might have been a little bit cheesy, but to obviously pull in someone like that is kind of cool.
And I mean, it indicates that things go on.
Yeah, life goes on.
Although, you got the same thing when you picked the synthetic ending. So,
yeah.
And it was a person. It wasn't Robo-Grandpa. on that note, it's cold. I think I have to pee.
All right.
Adam, thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
Francesca, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to Kevin, who is writing a Ninja Gaiden review right now, I believe. All right. Bye, guys.